WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Language commentator Jeffrey Nunberg says some grammarians get carried away with the technical rules of grammar called shibboleths.
The word shibboleth comes to us from a Hebrew word that means stream in flood, via the story of the battle between the Gileadites and the Ephraimites that's recounted in the book of Judges, chapter 12. And the Gileadites took the fords of the Jordan against the Ephraimites, and it was so that when any of the fugitives of Ephraim said, "Let me go over," the men of Gilead said unto him, "Art thou an Ephraimite?" If he said, "Nay," then they said unto him, "Say now, Shibboleth." And he said, "Sibboleth," for he could not pronounce it right. Then they laid hold on him and smote him at the fords of the Jordan, and there fell at that time of Ephraim 42,000. Those 40,000 Ephraimite casualties are nothing against the number of people who have fallen victim to modern shibboleths, those subtle points of grammar and usage which linguistic cognoscenti use to distinguish themselves from the rabble, and which make the language seem a kind of minefield to everybody else. I'm not talking here about the kinds of mistakes that the ordinary thoughtful writer can hope to avoid. To qualify as a shibboleth, a usage has to be based on some obscure point of logic or etymology which the average person could never be expected to be familiar with, and which makes no real difference to the sense of what's communicated. In this way, shibboleths can be known only to those people who are privy to a body of arcane lore that's passed along from one generation of language purists to the next. The list of English shibboleths is long and depressing. Don't split an infinitive, don't use data as a singular noun, don't begin a sentence with and or but, don't use can I to ask permission. But no usage sends modern Gileadites to the barricades more quickly than the alleged misuse of hopefully as a sentence adverb, as in, hopefully the war will end soon. The story here goes that hopefully means in a hopeful manner, and so can be used properly only in a sentence containing a verb like say, as in, "Perhaps the rain will stop," he said hopefully. Now, to hear purists talk about the misuse of hopefully, you'd think it was on a par with spitting tobacco juice at a wedding. One writer says that it is slack-jawed, common, and sleazy. Another calls it barbaric, illiterate, offensive, damnable, and inexcusable. But really, this one is shibboleth all the way. In the first place, the logic of the rule is inconsistent. If you condemn this use of hopefully, then you ought to come down just as hard on the use of frankly in a sentence like, "Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn." But of course, nobody's bothered by that. What's more, this use of hopefully is really quite useful. How else would you convey the meaning of hopefully the war will end soon? I hope the war will end soon? No, that's too subjective. And as for it is to be hoped that the war will end soon, well, you've got to be kidding. These fetishes and superstitions should be dismissed as mere silliness. The trouble is that the purists have been using them for generations to browbeat people into thinking that the rights and wrongs of English usage are a kind of Eleusinian mystery that's accessible only to a privileged caste. But we can take some consolation in knowing that modern shibboleths cleave both ways. They reveal as much about the Gileadites as they do about the Ephraimites. The next time somebody tries to nail you on a hopefully or a split infinitive, you have every reason to suspect that you've run into that most insufferable of creatures, the language bore. Lay hold on him and smite him down at the ford of the Jordan. It'll do you both a world of good.
Jeffrey Nunberg is a linguist associated with the Institute for Research on Learning in Palo Alto, California.